This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, if you're listening to this, I will assume you're at least interested in money, understanding the economy and finances as well. And some of us now want to get the next generation interested as well. So check out Million Bazillion, Marketplace's award-winning kids podcast that breaks down money to help dollars make more sense. Tune into Million Bazillion wherever you find your favorite podcast. A whole new season is out now. Million Bazillion is presented in partnership with Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Greenlight helps kids and teens learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Get 1 month free and an extra $10 when you sign up for a Greenlight account at greenlight.com/million.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, celebrating over 70 years of service to financial advisors, their clients, and institutions worldwide. Putnam Investments, a world of investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Holiday schmoliday, the Greek debt crisis knows no boundaries. Also, it's not all about holiday shopping, you know. There are plenty of folks for whom tomorrow is just another day. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by the all-new Chevrolet Volt, available soon in select markets. Details at ChevyVolt.com. The all-new Chevrolet Volt. It's more car than electric. And by Ally Bank, offering its Raise Your Rate CD as well as online savings account and money market account. Learn more at AllyBank.com.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Friday today, December the 24th, Christmas Eve, 2010. Good to have you with us. Sadly, there's not much holiday cheer for holders of European government bonds right now. They've had to digest some fairly unpalatable news this week. Credit downgrades for both Portugal and Hungary. Developments in Greece today are causing some concern, too. Greek bond prices and the cost of insuring against a default by the government in Athens are rising amid reports that the market is not at all sure how financially sound Greece might be, even after a bailout. From the European desk in London, Marketplace's Stephen Beard has more.
A newspaper in Athens carried the story. It claimed the Greek government is planning to renegotiate some of its loans. That would be tantamount to default, the first time for a developed European country since the Second World War. The Greek government denied the story, but economist Andrew Hilton says something like this is inevitable.
Certainly, I think there'll have to be a restructuring of debt on the part of the Greeks, and that restructuring of debt will mean that creditors take a hit.
Greece and Ireland have both been bailed out by the European Union and the IMF. They're protected from default until 2013. But Stephen Lewis of Monument Securities says investors are fretting about what happens after that protection expires.
There's not a lot of confidence that the hard-pressed countries will be in any better position to service their debt in 3 years' time than they are at present.
That lack of confidence is spreading to other, much bigger and heavily indebted euro countries like Spain and even Italy. Their governments must borrow hundreds of billions next year. Steve Barrow of Standard Bank thinks they'll struggle to raise the money, and that'll put the euro under more pressure.
I do have a sense that the market is lining up to sell the euro in the early part of next year. The first part of 2011, the first quarter, could be a very difficult period for the eurozone.
Even before Christmas, it's safe to say, it won't be a happy new year for the euro. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Judging by the crowds I saw out there, those I was finishing up my shopping this morning, it's going to be a fine holiday season back here. The National Retail Federation predicts sales are going to rise 3.3% than last year. But then again, not everybody's going to be celebrating tomorrow. And I don't just mean the live simple and don't spend anything types. I mean people who don't celebrate Christmas and so don't give gifts or spend pots of money going out at this time of year. Or don't they? We asked Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman to find out.
The Christmas Muzak, the jingling cash registers.
Total came to 105.43.
It's not music to everyone's ears.
My name is Jesse Day. I'm a Muslim here in the Portland area. Most Muslim families, they're almost unaware of the holiday.
Day, though, is a recent convert. His wife is Christian. The kids are being raised in both faiths.
I just got out of Value Village. I was doing Christmas shopping. So admittedly, I bought them Christmas gifts.
Retail analyst Patty Edwards says stores can pretty much count on the Christmas consumption spirit spilling over to many non-Christians. Roughly 5% of Americans identify as Muslim, Jewish, Buddhist, or Hindu. Another 10% have no religion.
Regardless of whether or not they are celebrating Christmas, the fact is that the sales and the deals that are available are better than the rest of the year.
Richard Young, who is Baha'i, will give a few gifts to his wife and kids.
Just because it's that time of the year and it's sort of a cultural thing. In total, maybe $100.
Though that's a far cry from the $650 the average Christmas shopper will spend. It's hard to find figures for Hanukkah gift-giving, though many Jews are also spending more, including for Christmas dinner, as Supreme Court Justice Elena Kagan famously quipped.
You know, like all Jews, I was probably at a Chinese restaurant.
It's often where my Jewish family ends up, because it's the only thing open. And it's not just a Jewish thing. Patty Edwards remembers, growing up, her grandmother worked retail and got home late on Christmas Eve.
My dad and my grandfather would put all the kids in the car and pick up the Chinese food just as Grandma was coming home. And interestingly enough, Santa Claus always came while we were gone.
I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Wall Street had the day off today, so we're going to have to think of something else to say when we do the numbers. Time to take a minute on a Friday and figure out where things stand economy-wise with a segment that we call our weekly wrap of Wall Street and Beyond. Here to help us do that are Heidi Moore. She writes for The Deal Book at The New York Times. Also, Felix Salmon from Reuters. Heidi, Felix, good to talk to you both again.
Good to talk to you,
Kai. Merry Christmas, Kai.
So let's give a nod to the events of the week. And before we move to funner stuff, let's talk about the president and this thing he said in his press conference on Wednesday before he went to Hawaii, where he said, next year, the economy is going to be my singular focus. How do you believe that?
I believe he believes it. I think that it's definitely an admirable goal to have, and it makes perfect sense because we've seen a lot of things come to a head just in the past few months that show that the economy really is going to be at the top of everyone's mind. For instance, what's been happening with a lot of municipalities that are struggling with debt, unemployment continues to drag on, and at the same time, we've seen a lot of positive economic indicators. So if there is a time to strike, it is now, because it seems like we are hitting a turning point where it might actually make a difference to act now.
Felix, you buying any of that?
I'm very far from convinced that there's anything that the president can actually do, especially now that the Republicans have taken over the House and the limits of fiscal policy have been pushed by this latest escapades with the Bush tax cuts. I think that was it, really.
Okay, so now to the really juicy tidbit of the week. This ProPublica article that dropped Wednesday night about Merrill Lynch and what you have to call its scandalous practices to get its CDOs, its mortgage-backed securities, bought. Felix, give us the 30-second analysis of this piece.
Merrill Lynch couldn't sell a bunch of nuclear waste, and so it paid three people inside Merrill Lynch millions of dollars in bonuses to look the other way and buy this stuff anyway for much more than it was worth. And these guys, one of them got paid $6 million in 1 year. It's pretty atrocious.
Heidi, let me make sure everybody understands this. Merrill Lynch couldn't get people to buy the CDOs that it was creating, so it bribed its own people to buy them. Yeah?
Yes. And that same bonus structure extended all the way up Merrill Lynch's hierarchy. If you look at the head of fixed income who employed or at least bossed around those traders and the people who structured those CDOs, he was paid the same way. The more CDOs his group created, the more in fees they would get, the more his bonus would grow. So you can easily see how it can start at the top and just rot all the way down.
To put this in perspective, we're talking about bonuses in the sort of $5 to $15 million range. And in order to generate these bonuses, what Merrill did was create CDOs worth $40 to $50 billion, which was enough to destroy the entire franchise, which had been going for, you know, decades. So yeah. This very narrow-minded, short-sighted greed on the part of the investment bankers destroyed an entire company.
Heidi, I'm dismayed to point out that this article comes out Christmas week. Nobody's really paying attention. I mean, you know, the three of us are talking about it, and it's gotten a little bit of buzz, but it's going to go away because, what, people are sick and tired of the financial crisis?
There's part of that. Also, people are spending more, so they're really busy kind of outside of the house, yeah. Not near their laptops.
I think the other reason that people don't care is because Merrill Lynch doesn't really exist anymore. It's been subsumed into the monster that is known as Bank of America.
But don't you wonder, you guys, where the outrage is?
If I wondered where the outrage was, I'd be outraged every day. I think, yeah, you do get a sort of outrage fatigue after a while.
Well, I also think that there are bigger things to be outraged about. I mean, this is pretty bad, but, you know, if you take a look at sort of people who created bad CDOs purely to short them, that's a far greater crime.
And this is the Goldman Sachs story, of course.
Exactly. This is the story of the Abacus CDO. That's horrible, right? Because that magnified the losses way beyond any of those individual mortgages. So, you know, the fact that these guys created, you know, bad CDOs in the first place is fine, but it could have been worse.
All right. And with that, the Christmas Eve edition of the Weekly Wrap comes to a close. Heidi Moore, she writes for Dealbook at the New York Times. Felix Salmon from Reuters. See you guys. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Kai.
Here's a not-so-merry fact to keep in mind if you have to go out holiday shopping today. First of all, you're out shopping on Christmas Eve. Next year, don't do that. It'll hurt less. But more to the point, a survey out not too long ago showed almost half of us are still paying off the credit card bills we racked up last December. Deep in debt's really no place to be whatever this season, but what do you do when the bills are piling up even before the shopping frenzy starts? Here's a look at the holidays through the eyes of a woman facing Christmas $50,000 in the hole.
I felt like my feet were glued to the track. I could see my life coming at me, you know, when there was like an American Express card and there was, you know, several Visa cards, MasterCards, and they were just coming at me and coming at me and coming at me. And because I knew that I couldn't keep making up the minimum payments on them, that train was going to hit me, it was going to hit me hard, and it was going to destroy me. My pattern with gift giving was that I always had to have the perfect present. That's what made me feel like I hit a home run. I always had to have something that just knocked your socks off. And the only way I knew how to do that was by spending a lot of money. I had a very humble spending plan. I decided that I really couldn't afford to buy presents for everybody. I was going to spend a total of $100 for Christmas. And how in the hell can you buy presents for all your friends and for your family for $100? So there was a way to handle that I hadn't thought of before. And I decided that I would make a lot of presents. For all of my friends, I would just get little tiny things and I would wrap them in the most exquisite paper and I would decorate them with like little bells and little tiny pine cones, and I just turned them into these treasures. I spent the bulk of the money that I had set aside for my nieces and my nephew. I really liked the connection with them through giving them things that I knew that they would enjoy. I think my favorite thing was what I bought for my nephew. He was about 5 years old, and he was really into army things and wearing army clothes, and it was a little guy thing, I think. You know, I wanted to go out and buy him a tank, you know, a motorized tank, and there was no way I could do that. I couldn't compete with his grandparents, who had much more money than I did, and they wanted to give him everything. So I went to the Army-Navy store, and I bought an ammo belt. I put a compass in it. I put a little mini flashlight in another compartment. I think the whole thing probably cost me about $12. Well, I talked to my brother on Christmas Day, and he told me that my nephew just flipped for the ammo belt that I got him, and he was running around the house in his underwear, wearing the belt with a cape on, and he didn't even want to take it off to go to bed. And, you know, I knew there was the home run, and I didn't have to spend a lot of money. And there's also a tremendous amount of relief knowing that when January comes, that I didn't owe a MasterCard bill or a Visa bill, or that I hadn't taken money out of a line of credit that I shouldn't have to buy gifts.
Trey Kay produced that story for us. Coming up, the hidden angst of writing a Christmas classic.
On one hand, you're thinking that you're, you know, I'm such the artist. And on the other hand, it's like, ka-ching.
But first, let's do the numbers. Though there are stock markets elsewhere in the world that are open today, we offer a slightly different take on the numbers this Christmas Eve. The actual cost of the 12 days of Christmas, courtesy of PNC Financial, they do it every year. One partridge in a pear tree, $161.99, up 1.3% from last year. That's $12 for the bird, $149.99 for the tree. Two turtle doves will run you $100, even up 80%, mostly on higher demand. Ditto for the three French hens, up 233% to $150 total. Four calling birds come in at $599.69. That's flat from a year ago. Rising gold prices have the five rings running $649.95, up 30% from a year ago. Six geese a-laying are flat, $150. Seven swans a-swimming ain't cheap, $5,600, up 6.7%. Eight maids a-milking, just the labor costs, of course, are $58 at minimum wage. That's flat from last year. Nine ladies dancing rose 15%, $6,293.03 this year. Ten lords a-leaping bumped 8% higher, $4,766. Those 11 Pied Pipers piping are a relative bargain, $2,356, up 3.1% this year. 12 drummers drumming saw the same percentage increase to $2,552 this year, which brings us to the total Christmas price index of $23,439.38, up 9.2%. If you do it right, though, sing all 12 verses of the song and then buy all that stuff, $96,824.29. You're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Novo Nordisk. Since 1923, innovative developer of diabetes treatments and delivery devices at novonordisk-us.com. By Thomson Reuters, a source of intelligent information to businesses and professionals around the world. Thomson Reuters, knowledge to act. And by Vanguard, whose mission is to simplify investing and to help people reach their financial goals at vanguard.com/public radio. Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Monday. Christmas will be all over, but your tree is probably still up. According to the National Christmas Tree Association, about 25 to 30 million real Christmas trees are sold each year in the U.S. That means live tree. Probably smells like pine. And from the history pages, the Blue Angel brought her fame. Marlene Dietrich was born on December 27, 1901 in Berlin. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdal. For the first time in a couple of years, it seems there is real retail holiday cheer to be had out there, a spirit of generosity and goodwill. But Marketplace's Sarah Gardner has a growing sense of, well, something else.
I read an article recently that said people who give gift certificates for Christmas have no soul. Apparently, I'm soulless. Deciding what to give at Christmas and how many people to give to can be torture. Gift cards and cash just lessen the pain. But the accusation that I have no soul really stings. I go looking for some inspiration. I ask Kim, a fellow kindergarten mom I find at our local coffee house. She's got two sisters, five brother and sisters-in-law, and 15 nieces and nephews. Now, she's not above a gift certificate or two when it comes to some of those kids, but cash and its sly cousin, the gift card, won't fly with their parents.
That's where we put into play the pull the name out of a hat and fill someone's stocking idea, which is really fun. My brother-in-law got my name, and he had remembered me during the year saying that I really wanted a T-bone steak, and I got a T-bone steak in my stocking.
Animal flesh in a sock. I take it under consideration until I talk to my friend Miriam.
Every year someone says, oh, let's draw names out of a hat, and I just think that's such a ripoff.
Miriam's a firm believer in everybody in the family giving everyone else a gift, no matter how small. This is the season of generosity, after all, she says.
And a lot of times it's not about the money. It's about the fussing and the shopping. And I'm just going to say, look, I am going to give you something whether you like it or not. So you're going to get a pair of gloves and you're going to like it. And don't feel like you have to send me a pair back, but it would be nice.
So you're guilting them out. Come on. I mean, you know.
I think I am sort of guilting it out.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
That's the unspoken facet of Christmas gift giving. When we give, we can bask in the warm glow of our generosity, but we also impose, and don't deny it, a sense of obligation on the recipient. One friend of mine, whose family is large enough for its own zip code, found herself giving every member of her tribe a pair of socks one year, just to make sure she'd covered her bases. She now just gives her numerous nieces and nephews a little cash. Problem is, once you start, when do you stop? Kim is still shelling out $20 to her grown relatives.
One of my nephews is 30 and has his own child. Do I still cut him in?
Do you?
Or I may have to say, you know what, I'm cutting you loose. I may have to just sit him down and have that conversation.
I'll have a blue Christmas without you.
My friend Kathy has trouble cutting people loose, too. That's why she was so relieved when her best friend had the guts to make the change.
About 5 years ago, when her son was small, she called me up one day and she said, you know what, let's talk about this whole Christmas thing, you know?
Kathy's friend suggested they stop giving each other gifts and stick to the kids.
I probably wouldn't have been able to do it myself, but I had wanted it. I just would have not been able to do that.
That's the hardest part of gift giving, just saying no. In other words, I love you, but I can't afford you anymore. But back to my problem. Does giving gift cards and cash make me a soulless Scrooge? I decide to ask a real expert, Miss Manners.
It has totally undermined the entire purpose of exchanging presents.
Ooh, am I in trouble?
Which is symbolic, to show at least I'm trying to think about you and I notice things about you, and so I'm guessing what might please you. I might guess wrong, and you should not let me know that I have guessed wrong. But I'm trying, and that's what the system is all about.
Well, that's it. Goodbye gift cards and cash. Hello woolen scarves and aftershave. And I won't feel bad if my relatives don't like their presents. Miss Manners told me they can exchange them or even pass them on. I have her on tape saying it.
The wonderful advantage that Manners has over morals is, in Manners, if nobody knows about it, you can get away with it.
Okay, I gotta go shopping. Maybe I'll start at the butcher's and see if there are any nice T-bone steaks on sale. In Los Angeles, looking for gifts with soul, I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
Christmas presents around the world, something mighty sweet to see. Only if I just had a present for everyone under one great big Christmas tree.
You might have seen a movie a number of years ago called About a Boy. Hugh Grant plays a cad who's living off royalties from an insipid Christmas song his dad wrote about a rocket-powered sleigh. Seems Santa needed a little something extra under the hood to make his appointed gift-giving rounds. Nate DeMayo has the story of a real-life holiday semi-classic and how it has brought more than 20 years of Christmas bonuses to its reluctant writer.
Chris Butler isn't the kind of guy who TiVos It's a Wonderful Life.
I am the Scrooge. I do have a T-shirt that says, Jump, George Bailey, jump.
And in August of 1981, Christmas was the last thing on Butler's mind. He just moved to New York from the Midwest in search of respectable obscurity as an avant-garde musician in the big city. He was a fixture at the dirtiest clubs and the most secret loft parties. He was broke. Things were going great. But then he says, It all went wrong.
I had really messed up, and I had written a catchy little tune. I was too embarrassed for any of the bands I were in to play, and they agreed.
I know what boys like. I know what guys want.
Soon, Chris and his new band, called The Waitresses, were touring, trying to push his minor radio hit further up the charts, when the head of their avant-garde label came in with an idea.
Since irony ruled in that era, our record company executive said, Oh, Chris, I have a wonderful idea. I'm going to make a Christmas album with all our artists.
Holiday-friendly artists like Suicide and Lydia Lunch.
And so they were going to make a Christmas album with these cranks and weirdos.
But you know, Butler nailed it. Over the course of a few summer days, Chris Butler wrote a surprisingly sweet take on the more than occasional misery of the modern holiday season. Christmas Wrapping tells the story of a young urbanite who decides she's just too busy to deal with the parties and presents. She's gonna have Christmas alone this year. But after a year filled with missed connections and charming mishaps, a Christmas miracle. Even a self-described Grinch like Butler kind of liked it. And when the song started popping up on the radio that winter, he liked the royalty checks.
This song is loved by a lot of people. However, it is not Born to be Wild. That's an annuity. Christmas Wrapping allows me to get, you know, two toppings on my pizza instead of just pepperoni.
A little more than that. A 45-second snippet played in a bar scene in a movie might earn him as much as $30,000. The whole song in a hit movie with a hit soundtrack could end up pulling in well over $100,000. That could have happened this year if it weren't for the doomed love of Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez. After their breakup, the producers of their movie Jersey Girl decided to cut a lot of J-Lo scenes out, including one set to the tune of Christmas Wrapping.
If they had just stayed together one more month.
But we shouldn't worry about Butler's financial health too much. Royalties have allowed him to continue to stay comfortably in the world of the avant-garde. He's in the Guinness Book of World Records for writing the longest pop song. It clocks in at 69 minutes. And he spends a lot of his time recording songs like this with no electricity, using wire recorders and Edison wax cylinders.
From a hole in the sky came.
He owes much of that freedom to this cover version of Christmas Wrapping by the Spice Girls.
No, that's too strong, 'cause it's my favorite holiday.
That really messes your mind up because on one hand, you're thinking that you're, you know, I'm such the artist. And on the other hand, it's like, ka-ching. You know, it's taken years of therapy to sort it out.
So the song will go back into hibernation in a few days, and Butler will start watching his mailbox to see what his Christmas bonus will be this year. After 20 years, he says, it's not just the check. Every year, the song comes back and taps him on the shoulder and reminds him that something he wrote has made a lot of people happy. But there's one thing that would make the season brighter.
Any gung-ho executive out there who hears this, please remember that Grandma Got Run Over by a Sleigh or whatever was made into a half-an-hour TV special. Christmas Wrapping has not been made into a half-an-hour TV special. It's a ripe opportunity. It's a great urban love story with ironies and twists galore. I think we need to talk.
This is Nate DeMeo for Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, committed to helping families across America pursue their college savings goals. On the web at putnam.com/529.
Additional support from the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
This final note today, an observation about the spirit of the season. I learned today that a 1983 South African Krugerrand is worth about $1,400. I know that because somebody dropped one, their gold coins, into a Salvation Army collection pot in Bloomfield, Colorado the other day. Lest you think it was a horrible mistake by an absent-minded coin collector, Krugerrands have been found in Salvation Army kettles in Indiana, Washington, and Florida this season as well. And on that note, this Christmas Eve, that's Marketplace from American Public Media. U.S. markets were closed for the holiday today. Our theme music was composed by B.J. Lederman. Marketplace is produced by Celeste Weston. The executive producer is J.J. Yore. Have a good Christmas, if that's your thing. Either way, we're back here on Monday with this.
If we get a soil-borne disease, we could lose our whole field.
Toxic Strawberries on the broadcast. None too appetizing, I'd say. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Have yourself a great weekend.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.